In this week, on the 25th of January 1975, Dickie Guy earned legendary status by saving Scottish international Peter Lorimer's late to secure the Southern League Dons and FA Cup replay at First Division champions Leeds United. The bearded custodian made a string of fine saves as the host piled on second half pressure before the man with supposedly the hardest shot in football put his tame effort to the right of the goal, and the London Docks tally clerk got down well to push the ball away. Ah, Dickie Guy, he's still with us. We're still with you. We're the same old Wombles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth. If we win or we lose, we just go on.
Hello, hello, dear listener, and welcome to the show. We have got a very special show for you today, a very special guest. Let me first introduce our regular team. Cooper, hi, Nye, how you doing?
I'm all right, Matty. Good to see you.
And you. And our man with the buttons, Dr. Professor Adam Proctor. How are you doing, Adam?
I'm fine, thanks, actually. I mean, I've had a mad weekend, but it's all good.
Yeah, that song is never going to leave my head now when I'm introducing you. And our stats man, our man with all the football knowledge, the 442 of Same Old Wombles, Tor Mark Lewis. Hello, Mark. How you doing?
Good evening. No one plays 442 anymore. It would be nice if they did, but we don't, clearly. We'd love to. Our special guest clearly is certainly the kind of person that would be very familiar with that formation. So I'll let you get on with introducing him.
Yeah, and our very special guest, an FA Cup winner. It is Clive Winko. Good year. How are you doing, Clive?
Very good, thank you. Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's great to see you, mate. It's absolutely fantastic. So I'm just really excited to have you with us. Have you been down to Plough Lane?
I came down at the end of last season, yeah, for the first time, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you reckon to it?
I loved it. I thought it was a smashing day out. The game was good and the whole ground and the whole atmosphere was fantastic.
A bit different from the old Plough Lane?
Just a bit. Just a bit smarter.
Did you enjoy that old Plough Lane? Because I always got a sense from people that played there before that it was kind of like a homely atmosphere. For us, we made it kind of like a fortress.
Let's say it had a bit of character. That would be a good description. The actual playing surface itself was actually so perfect at that time. A lot of the grounds around were pretty much good. But it was a bit old and worn, let's say, but it was a characteristic.
Yeah, and I think the reason, people always say the reason why our ground was so good is because we never used to play the ball on it.
That's probably correct, yeah.
Can I ask, what was your... So you came to us in, what was it, 87?
87, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. What was your early career like before you got to us?
I started off joining Luton Town at the end of 1978. I had two trial games with those and I was signed on then from then. So I had 5.5, 6 years then. Before I went to Plymouth for 3 years and then after Plymouth I came to Wimbledon.
Well, and how did that move come about? How did your move to Wimbledon come about?
Well, I was at the end of my contract at Plymouth. I'd been there for 3 years and I decided to leave. And I'd actually agreed to go to York City. I'd agreed a contract with York City. And at the last second, Bobby Gould came in and asked me to have a talk with him and ended up signing for Wimbledon.
Some difference. York City or First Division football, they're in the top flight of English game. That is some turnaround. I mean, like, you know, were you kind of going, what's going on here? Or is it just like, you know?
I mean, yeah, I'd had for Luton down in the First Division previously. So it just out of the blue, it's a great chance to get back into the First Division again to play. So I took the opportunity as soon as Bobby offered it.
What was the I'm just kind of totally interested about what was the dressing room like? Because obviously people talk a lot about the kind of different factions that were in the club at that time. So there was the kind of, you know, the Dave Bessant, Laurie Sanchez group, and then obviously the Vinnie and Fash group.
Yeah.
We always thought...
I can't see Clive actually being part of either of those. He seems far too sensible.
So going back to what was the dressing room like, I mean, to be honest, I didn't know a lot about the club and the Crazy Gang at the time. I mean, unlike now, the football wasn't on the TV all the time and in the news as it is now. And coming from Plymouth, which is at the end of the earth anyway, we didn't know what was going on in the rest of the country half the time. So I was quite welcome straight away, and there wasn't any issues.
No one burnt any of your clothes. You weren't you didn't have to
walk naked to your car. Not straight away, no. I got away with it for a year or so, but it wasn't immediate, no.
Really? So there was some sort of initiation?
There was, yes. Well, it was towards the end, actually. Probably it would be longer than that. It was the end of my career at Wimbledon. I really got caught. That was on the pre-season tour to Scotland.
Okay, you're going to have to say, I'm afraid, Clive. Or can you not mention it? You cannot talk about it?
Yes, I can, certainly. I wasn't. I'd coming back from injury. I wasn't in the squad full time, so I made up the numbers to go to Scotland. And coming back one afternoon after training or on a day off, we stayed in Edinburgh University. Opened the lift, and the entire content of my living room, my bedroom, was in the lift, wardrobe and everything.
That seems somehow to be something quite common. I've read that in other places, not just Wimbledon, but like other clubs around the kind of late 80s, early 90s things. Young men will be young men, I suppose.
That's
most bizarre as it is. I had a random question for you, Clive. You mentioned already you started your career in Luton. Was that like a hometown club or hometown area?
No, I'm from Lincoln originally.
Okay.
I was a schoolboy with Lincoln City under Graham Taylor at the time. And then I was released from Lincoln City. I played for Lincoln United in the Yorkshire League for a year. Then I got trialled at Luton.
So this came up. We were talking about a player that we recently released who's in the last 3 years. He's played in Scotland and he grew up in Nottingham. He played for us, obviously, in London, and he's now gone to Bristol. And we were talking about moving around, and I'm sure the same thing applies. You've already mentioned you've gone from Lincoln to Luton, which is not that far, relatively. No. Then you come to London. Were you commuting then, like all the way around the M25, or did you come down south?
From Plymouth.
Plymouth, yeah. Which is even moving here, there and everywhere.
Yeah, so from Plymouth, we'd already decided to leave. I'd already moved back to Luton for family reasons. And so when I signed for Wimbledon, I was travelling from Luton every day to Wimbledon, yeah.
And I guess that's one thing that even now, obviously we're talking 40 years later, but a lot of us as normal fans just don't even think or even appreciate that you're like, why did player X go from club Y to club Z? Yeah. Well, actually, if there are family reasons or there's other people around or you're from a certain area, that's why you're going to do it. You know, that's why you're going to want to do it. And yes, it's a job. And yes, it's our club, but you've got to be comfortable because the Luton area is where you've gone back to in retirement, presumably.
Yeah. Yeah, and obviously at that time there wasn't the M25 wasn't fully completed, so it was cross country all the way to Plymouth and back again and initially. But
Oh, don't tell me you can't have been commuting from Luton to Plymouth. That I refuse.
I did move down to the Plymouth area, but when you came back home, you know, just etc.
I've got to look, Matt, right. We've got to get to the key point, right? So, 88 cup final.
Oh, yeah. I'm just building up to it.
I'm taking it.
No, we've got to go through the cup run first. Start with Mansfield White.
No.
You know?
Far too important, right? John Aldridge.
Yeah.
Was he clearly diving? You know, obviously. But, like, what is your reaction then? Talk us through that kind of because it's got to be etched in your head. What the hell has just happened? Like, I mean, just, you know, just the whole moment, whole thing. Clive Goodge's thoughts. What was
that,
it like?
At that moment in time, I think it was Peter Beardsley had threaded the ball through, and I read the pass, and I just slid in and played the ball back to David.
Great
Hazard.
Tackle.
Yeah, probably my best one of the season. But, and I don't know if John dived, or I know he just fell over my body. I haven't seen it back. It takes a little bit of a dive, but there was no contact whatsoever with John Aldridge at the time. Purely played the ball. So when the whistle went, it was pure disbelief and shock, really. I didn't know how to react. I know everybody else reacted in a gamely way at times, but it was just pure shock.
Presumably, Besant and Sanchez and Vinny were the ones effing and blinding at the referee.
Yes, it looked like that way. Yeah. The usual.
I want to rewind a bit, because I want to know what was it like going into that game? The build up towards that, like that's for us, obviously, and still, I think it's, you know, the FA Cup is a massive thing. I think it's amazing, still, you know, do, and obviously we've probably watched a lot of it numerous times because it used to be on like all day and you'd see the build up and whatever. But what was it like?
And we were teenagers at this point.
That's Besson's like captain's armband there.
Oh, okay.
I've got a signed shirt from Vinny, just on that side.
He's sad, Clive. He's sad, you know.
Sorry.
I've just got a signed, no, it's not signed, it's just a framed picture of the, of like a miniature of the goal. But I have also got somewhere. Oh, it's hidden now because just done some decorating. I've got a signed photo signed by Laurie of the goal. But of course, the hilarious thing about it is everyone points out when they remind me of how much I paid for it at auction. Is that there are 8 or 9 Liverpool players on there, and you can just about see the side of Sanchez's arse and the top of Cork's head.
Okay.
And that's it. You can't see anyone else in a blue shirt anyway. Sorry.
Anyway, going back to Adam's question, which we just talked all over.
This is normal.
So the build-up.
dear me. All the time, every week, Clive, it's like this. Every week. All of a sudden, it gets into, I've got this, you've got that. Oh, dear. I do apologise. So please do take us back to the start of that, to the start of the game, what that whole build-up was like.
Well, the whole build-up, as every schoolboy at that time in the 60s, 70s, grew up with the FA Cup final, which was the biggest occasion in football at that time. So you always wanted to be part of it. Having nearly missed the final again through injury, I and then named in the team just play on the Thursday. I was just so determined to take in everything around me, really engrossed in it. And from the minute you wake up in the morning, as I said before, you're like a schoolboy, Christmas morning, it's just the biggest dream ever. And then you put the TV on, having woke up next to Terry Gibson with his boots on already. It was a really weird feeling watching the build-up football grandstand and that sort of thing on the TV. It's just like watching as we did when we were boys.
And Tony Gabbel was on the coach, wasn't he? I think, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, I think he was, yes. Yeah.
It's just amazing. So you were rooming with Gibbo?
Terry Gibson, yeah.
Yeah. That's so funny. He goes up with his boots on. Yeah.
Were you part of the group that went to the pub the night before?
I was, yes. Yeah.
So that isn't just an urban myth. You did all go and have a couple of beers.
We did, yes. We were in the hotel for a couple of days. And obviously, time on our hands, we didn't know what to do. So Bobby Hill just gave us a few quid to go down the pub and relax and have a couple of drinks. Turned into more than a couple of drinks.
Of course it did.
How many was a couple? How drunk were you guys? And what were you drinking, Clive?
Personally, I'd never, ever had a drink the night before a game, ever. For some reason, I had 5 or 6 pints of Guinness.
Shit.
So that was my personally, but I slept like a log and felt great in the morning. So there was no adverse reaction.
Guinnesses. I mean, like, you know, like,
but you're telling us that you're probably telling us now that that's like light for that group, that other people were caning it.
I think some were more, yeah, some were less. It's a safe way of saying it.
Dear me. But I think that
you
was
don't
a
have
quite
to be diplomatic now.
No, it's a good, it was a good idea, wasn't it? It took the edge off the occasion. I think people weren't nervous. They were just, you know, you all got together in the pub, you had some laughs, you had a few drinks, and you were sort of like relaxed. And yeah, it wasn't like we weren't prepared, because I'm hearing we were, you know, we were training up until the day before.
That's right, yeah, yeah. The funniest thing about that, there was one or two fans in the pub, and they're sort of looking at what's going on. Looking over as there's only corner. Yeah, so it's quite a unique situation, I suppose. Very unique.
Yeah, and what was the coach trip like on the way to Wembley?
Masses of red.
Yeah.
Especially at Wembley Way, there was just the odd pocket of blue. But again, driving up that iconic way to Wembley, it was a fantastic occasion.
Yeah, it was crazy. And so that whole run, because we are going to go back. Niles jumped in. We are gonna head back to what the start of that season. So you've come in 87. Did you get a sense that this was a team that could achieve something?
I suppose we did, yeah, because there was quite a few of us, five or six of us, new ones all coming in together. So we immediately got a little bond between us. And like myself, I was hoping to prove being good enough to play in the first division again. And I think Terry Feeling was the same, John Scales, Eric Young. We all wanted to do well. So, you know, we bonded straight away. We pre-season training and the pre-season friendlies went very well. We're very optimistic about doing well.
Yeah. And aside from obviously the big game of the season, what are the sort of experiences you remember from that season, 87, 88, playing in the squad? Any particular games stick out for you?
Well, again, disappointingly for me, I didn't play enough. I had one of those seasons where I got injured. And I was in and out of the team all the time, hence the number of games I played. I just seemed to be getting fit and playing and then get another injury and restarting again. So it's an in and out sort of thing situation for me. But the whole season, I mean, we finished seventh in the table, didn't we, at the end of the season as well. So we were pretty consistent in our performances and results all the way through the season. Maybe dipped off a little bit in the league towards the end of the season because of our involvement in the FA Cup. But overall, it was a great season to be involved in. We were playing the big teams and giving them a run for the money, beating them. And it was great.
Yeah, I mean, I always think that people underestimated us when it came to the cup final because, you know, we'd done a double over United that season,
yeah.
Already beaten Liverpool up at Anfield. So, you know, things were. It wasn't necessarily a surprise that we would beat them, and yet we were seeing such heavy odds against us. It was really weird.
Yeah, as everybody knows, we're one of the biggest underdogs ever for a final. I think that galvanised us even more, especially in the week's build up to the game, or the press releases, etc., about our wages and blah, blah, blah. And we did get together even more, I think.
Oh, there were some press articles on the day, which is basically not, are Liverpool going to win, but how many are they going to win by?
Yeah.
And I remember even as like a 17-year-old being quite, you know, cheesed off, to put it politely, about that. I'm sure as players, you guys must have been completely fed up, you know? It's unprofessional, really.
Absolutely unprofessional. We knew we played our A game on the day, we would give them the game, definitely, and have a chance of winning, definitely.
And so you were training all the way that week. I mean, were you given specific tasks? My sense was, obviously, what was it? Wise
and doubling up swap sides.
And they were doubling up on Barnes. So were you given a particular sort of like, make sure this doesn't happen or whatever?
Yeah, Liverpool that season were absolutely brilliant. Barnes, Aldridge and Beardsley in interchanging positions, especially on the left side. So it was Don Howe who came up with the idea of blocking the holes that Barnes and Aldridge were interchanging. And I think they thought Dennis would be more of a help than Gorky, legs wise on that side. So, which we set up like that, and that was done. That was done earlier in the week. Yeah.
Awesome, and obviously that team was full of amazing players. What was it like having someone like Laurie Cunningham around the place? Cause that seems like such a weird thing for him to end up at Wimbledon.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah, he was. I mean, what a player he was in his day back in Real Madrid and West Brom and Manchester United as well. He was a smashing guy, and his experience and skill definitely rubbed off on a few others. Yeah,
incredible. And I mean, the whole match was, I mean, for us as fans, was absolutely amazing. And that incredible tackle, which was brilliant. And I think the other key moment in the game was...
What, the Vinion McMahon, you mean?
The Vinion McMahon.
did Vinny say that he was going to do that with McMahon? Because it was like, it was a statement tackle, wasn't it?
Definitely a statement tackle, yeah. I think he did hint he was going to apply some sort of force at some point, yeah.
Like, so now, I know there's that, the shout in the tunnel, right?
Yeah.
That's talked about. And I know there's a polite word that it was. Do you remember, Clive, what it actually was?
A polite word? Was it Yidaho or something?
I think it was Yidaho.
Something like that, yeah.
But
Vinny was shouting. Vinny was shouting.
Slightly different. Yidaho's the polite version from what I've heard, but like, you know.
I don't know the full meaning, to be honest.
The next bit, Matt's talking about those. There's two kind of really key moments. Obviously, our goal, or three key moments, our goal, when Andy Thorne
calls
out Beardsley.
Yes.
Right. And then in modern day football, obviously, that would just be like, you know, a small ticking off, like clearly not straight red. But like, you know, what, when Andy Thorne did that, did you hear the whistle? Because that people, you know, as Wimbledon fans, obviously, we all heard the whistle, and clearly that's where we all stopped, right? Clearly. But, like, did you hear the whistle or not?
Personally, I didn't hear the whistle, no.
Man, that was a fantastic opportunity to lie for your teeth.
I think that is the weird thing, because it, like... But I think if you look back on it, I think other people had heard the whistle. Did people seem to stop?
Yeah.
And I wonder, do you watch it back much?
I haven't done for a while now, no, but I've seen it a few times, yeah. It's a 50-50, isn't it? It could have gone either way. I mean, who knows if it'll let it go.
But what do you think when you watch the match back? I mean, like, is it just? I mean, what a thing to have played in.
Yeah, as I say, I was determined to take in everything that happened on the day, and you know what's coming up, and I can say, yeah, that's going to happen. That's going to happen now. Every single minute of the game, yeah.
Yeah,
so it is very enjoyable.
Of course, and you come out. You obviously come out into the sunshine, out of the tunnel, and you line up, and you can see, you know, like you're facing all of these, you know, incredibly well known players, and you've got our team, and then you know Princess Diana's coming out.
Yeah.
So, what was going through your mind at that particular moment? Are you, because I think you just want to come out and play football, and you've got to wait for all of this stuff to happen. Are you taking that? Are you enjoying that at all?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the noise that hits you as you walk out the tunnel, it was unbelievable. It was nothing like, and of course you have the marching bands in those days as well, alongside, and it's a long, long walk to the centre circle, and then of course you've got the iconic meeting Lady Diana. Banner she was at the time, so it's really iconic. When looking back now, you didn't appreciate it at the time. You knew it was a bit of history, but now it's even more so. You know, it's really appreciated. Yeah.
Oh,
what was the reaction for you? Like two things. One, when Sanchez heads it in, I'd love to know what you thought. What was going through your head then? And then obviously the last one, the final whistle. So Sanchez heads it in. You've got memories of that at all? About what?
Yeah, I was just on the edge of the box. I think waiting for.
Ready to volley in.
Waiting on the edge just in case it comes to you and you smack it in.
Exactly. Yeah, that was it. So obviously the ball goes in, you go and celebrate. But my immediate thought was everybody was going mad. You look at the film of the game. I'm trying to say, calm down, let's get back and get set up, ready for the next bit, make sure we stay strong and set the goal. That was my only thought, really.
That's so professional, Clive. So were there other people in the team that you kind of looked around and go, God, they've got to calm down? Were there people like a little
yeah,
bit?
Yeah, Dennis was one of them. He was leaping around and the others, but that was my immediate thought. Let's get back to set up and concentrate for 10 minutes so we don't lose the goal.
That Brilliant. Is crazy, isn't it? Just to think about how professional you are at that moment. And it's interesting, so I wouldn't have thought of Dennis Wise being the one that was completely losing it. There were several other names that would have gone into my head before Dennis, but that's really fascinating to know.
Dennis Wise, the man that could start fighting an empty room, according to Alex Ferguson.
I'm not doubting that. The one who could, whatever, we're not even going to how many times he may have fallen over or whatever. That's he was always fouled. We always know that. And then obviously the final whistle. So the final whistle goes. I think we thought it had gone like about 20 seconds before, but like, you know, what's your recollection of that?
Yeah, just... we did when the first whistle went. I did start to celebrate, and then all of a sudden, whoa, you know, the referee's there playing a bit longer. So how long is it? It did seem a long time before the next whistle came along. But having been involved with the penalty, the final whistle went, it was just pure relief. We got through it, and unbelievable joy.
What does Dave Besson said to you? Because after that, you know, after the match or during it, considering the penalty, you know, I mean, you basically made him a hero. So, you know, what's the conversation between the two of you?
Looking back, we jumped in and had a cuddle. And I think some of the words along the lines of, yeah, Winko, we've done it, something like that, you know. And I can't remember exactly the wordings, but it was along those lines.
But and I think obviously when people look back, Don Howe gets a lot of credit for that particular season. You know, I don't think people have done it much before. The cold towels at halftime.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, it's such a hot day. Yeah, and I think he picked that up from Summit or something that he had seen. Yeah, it really did help as well. Yeah.
I mean, and he was, I mean, what, and as a person that influenced in that season, was it great to have him around?
Well, I used to call him Uncle Don. He was like your uncle, and it certainly helped me that season, having been a right back himself, his career. So I fed a lot off him and learned a lot off Don. But he was a terrific coach and top man.
Yeah. And I'm just amazed. So you've had five or six pints the night before, you've gone out, you've won the FA Cup. And the night afterwards, another five or six.
I would think probably more than that.
Yeah. There was a marquee on Plough Lane, I believe, and certain people who were around still were fortunate enough to somehow blag an invite. But we obviously were nowhere near it. We were all teenagers, as I say, and well, Niall and Matt a little younger. All I remember was opening a bottle of wine, and nobody wanted to drink it, so I drank all of it. which wasn't very wise. And then the next day, there was obviously the Open Top Parade.
Open Top Parade, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that must have been amazing.
Like that.
Yeah, it was amazing. Where did all these people come from?
Well, it was my hometown. So, I mean, I was there. I say I was there. The closer I got towards Rumnant Town Centre, the more I smelled hot dogs and the more sick I was on the streets. But that's not story entirely.
I mean, the average gate was what, 8,000-9,000 or something like that, and then all of a sudden we have 30,000 plus in the streets. It was fantastic.
Centre of Wimbledon has never seen anything like it before or since. Actually,
it was a stunning moment. We loved all that. And what was it like being up there, like on the balcony and looking out over all those fans? Apart from again, you going, where the hell have you been?
Yeah. Again, we was in sort of a recovery mode from the night before as well. So it was taking it all in again. It was just, it was an amazing scene. And, something to treasure.
Oh, how blurry was it, Clive?
Very blurry.
How messy was the night? Where were you all like absolutely stonkingly drunk the night before? Was there any shenanigans going on?
No, we weren't stonkingly drunk. We were all well drunk, but not nothing out of order or out of line like that. No, not at all.
But I mean, I'm just on a buzz. Just been just crazy. Did you sleep at all the night after the cup final?
Very little, very little. But I think we got back to the hotel early hours of the morning, so it wasn't a long sleep anyway. So,
oh, that's just absolutely amazing. And then the other thing, obviously, is the testimonial match.
Yeah,
I was there for that too. Are you in that long line? Like,
I
are
didn't,
you one of those that got fined?
I didn't play in that because I had a really bad heel. I couldn't get my boot on, so I didn't play. So I was missing from that famous lineup. Yeah.
Which meant you didn't get fined by the FA then. Because we had John Scales on the pod last season, and he admitted that he was part of that group. Although he also admitted that he was very fresh-faced at that point, so he didn't seem to have a clue what he was doing, and he just went along for the ride. He's a bit older and wiser now.
No, I sat watching that in disbelief, not knowing that what was going to come ahead of us with the fine and things. So,
oh, that's just crazy. And then it's just. It's such a shame about some things that happened up, the injuries that happened afterwards, because you, is it right, you were coming back for a pre-season and you got an injury there, so you were out of the Charity Shield and then out for 14 months.
It was the week before the Charity Shield, yeah, we were at Bristol Rovers pre-season friendly, and it was just a collision with a striker from Bristol, a complete accident, and ended up being my cruciate ligament, which, like I say, sent me out for a year. Yeah.
Did you manage to? Did you come back at all after that? Or was that?
Yeah, I came back. I think I played another three games for Wimbledon before I went to Brentford.
So I've just been looking in this wonderful book by a guy called Stephen Crabtree, who's a long-time Wimbledon fan. It's called Wimbledon from Wembley to Selhurst. If you can still get hold of it, it's published by Desert Island Football Books, and it's a chronological history, literally with game by game stuff. And it doesn't mention the injury, but it does actually show that in season 89-90, you played four games, according to
four
this.
Four games, yeah.
Obviously, by then, they'd signed Roger Joseph.
Yeah.
Ooh, Roger Joseph. And then you played right back end of the season. 3-1 win over Charlton, 0-0 draw with Coventry, 1-0 win over Tottenham, and then your last game was...
Palace, was it?
Palace. Yeah. Was that the last game of the Celeste, was it?
Yeah, we lost 1-0 to Palace. Yeah.
Was that the last game before you moved to Celeste?
No, that was the year after.
Season before.
So, but do you still keep in contact with any of the old Wimbledon guys, Clive, or not?
I haven't done for a while now, no. Because I've not been involved in football now for quite a few years, when you come out of the game, you lose a bit of contact, so... I saw, as I say, when I went to the game end of last season at Platt Lane, I saw John Scales and Harry Bassett. He was there as well. So occasionally you come across. I saw actually Dave Besant in Faro Airport, Portugal, last summer.
Oh, yes, you do.
We had a quick chat then, because we were in crossovers.
Talk about the next generation coming on. John Scales' daughter has just made her debut for AFC Women's team.
Really?
And she's in sixth form at school in Putney. It's just literally, obviously, the next generation coming on. So,
what are you up to now, Clive?
Yeah.
What's happening in your world now?
My world now, I'm actually retired. I finished my physio career. I went into physiotherapy from after having studied, having... the serious knee injury. I've been retired now for 7 years. So I bought a home in Portugal. I've got a holiday home in Portugal, and I go backwards and forwards there playing golf and walking and enjoying life.
That sounds like a tough life.
Yeah.
Nice.
do you watch much football at all? Do you go along and watch many games at all?
I don't. No, not really. I find it hard to watch. I've never been a great watcher, to be honest. I've always preferred playing. So, no, I've not been to many games, not recently.
Oh, well, that was great that you were down at Plough Lane last year, and we'll have to get you back down here again.
I did enjoy that. It's a great result as well, because it was against Notts County when we were going for the playoffs. Yeah,
That was a brilliant game.
We're fairly close. That was a great game. We are fairly close now to the 40th anniversary.
Yeah.
And I'd like to think someone entrepreneurial, not us at all, we'll just be there as punters. But I like to think someone entrepreneurial would actually arrange some kind of 40th anniversary type thing. Yeah. Obviously, it might be a little more difficult to get the likes of Fashionu from Nigeria and Vinny from Hollywood back on the day. But I'm sure that would be a really well-supported thing and possibly quite a good fundraiser for the club. And that would be great, obviously, to see yourself. And and the other elusive one that no one's ever managed to track down is, where is Eric Young and what on earth happened?
Yeah. I saw Eric in 1995 last time.
Wow.
This is the bizarre thing. We were both in Florida. And we was in one of the theme parks, you know, the lines for the rides in the theme park.
Oh, yeah.
He was going one way in the snake and I was going the other. And I looked round. Yogi! It was one of those. I couldn't believe it. It was ridiculous. We it was just a fleeting, hello, how are you, and all that sort of thing. He was with a little family and I was with my family. And that was it. And that's the last I saw of him.
Oh my lord!
As you say, if you move out football circles, then who knows where people actually are? So
yeah.
I'm guessing it's wonderful for all of you as a group that smartphones didn't exist those nights out. With the crazy game. Otherwise, there'd be some crazy pictures somewhere.
There would.
But Clive, thank you so much for your time. I mean, I think you have to realise that. For us, no matter whatever happens in our lives or in your lives, you're always going to be part of our history. You know, you played such an amazing part in Wimbledon folklore and actual fact in FA Cup folklore.
Yeah.
So, and I really hope you appreciate that. And we really appreciate all of your time with us and your stories. And we wish you the very best of luck and looking forward to seeing you back at Plough Lane again soon. It's an absolute honour to talk to you, my friend. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much for inviting me. I enjoyed that. Thank you.
Really appreciate that.
Cool. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Yeah.
Okay.
We'll catch you soon. Take care.
Okay, take care. Bye now.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye now. Bye.
That was the amazing Clive Goodyear. How cool was that? Thanks, Niall. I think you sorted that up.
That was cool.
That was great. I mean, really interesting to get that sort of take on it all. I didn't realise. I thought that it was a couple of pints for five Guinnesses.
That is a great little addition that no one's ever revealed beforehand, isn't it? You know, same old one was exclusive.
Yeah, that's
five
it. We're at it again. Dear me. But what a, you know, it is quite
a lot
weird.
Of iron. It's probably good for you, isn't it?
It's quite, isn't it quite weird? Because you know, obviously, when May comes round, you start to reflect on it. In May, you know, May 14th, you look at it, it's just amazing. But isn't it kind of weird to think that we were all there for that day and, you know, reliving these moments? It's just incredible. What an amazing day that was. And he is generally part of history.
Picture that tackle.
Yeah.
So much, you know, and all the rest of it. And the kind of absolute, you know, the how slow. You know, I mean, I suppose the penalty that was slow was probably the one in the semi with Fashanu against Luton. But, like, you know, still unbelievable.
I was, like, dead in line with that penalty in the semi-final. And because it was so slow, I remember watching it thinking, is it actually going to get to the goal?
Yeah.
Let alone go over the line.
I know. Incredible.
Well, see, you know, we talked about it the other day. That one of my mates is a Spurs fan and was a steward at White Hart Lane. And he was a ball boy, what I mean. He's directly behind Besson's goal. And if you look at it, he dives the correct way. Not Besson's, whatever his name was, the Luton goal he was. He dives the right way.
There's Seeley, I think.
There's Seeley. So he would have saved it.
Oh, no.
Totally. Anyway, Clive Goodyear, what a hero. So really, really, really cool to talk to him.
Absolutely amazing. But I guess, unfortunately, we have to wind forward however many years that is to 38 years.
38, yeah.
To the present time. And it's, you know, I just find it all a bit weird at the moment. I mean, I was just checking on socials earlier on and people saying that they feel very disassociated with the club, and some people aren't going to things, and you know, it's weird. I mean, I find it is. I can understand some people feel like that, but still, we're getting the crowds, aren't we? I mean, like we're getting over eight. We're getting over 8,000. We're filling out Plough Lane most games. And I can understand people are upset, but we were to realise this. We got promoted, guys. You know, we got promoted. We had an amazing season, and against the odds, we got promoted, and we knew it was going to be tough. It was a great start to the season. We knew it was going to be tough.
I don't know exactly what people are getting upset about, actually, to be honest, other than fueling themselves on made-up stories, as we discussed a bit last week.
Well, as long as they are made up, I hope they are made up. You don't know.
Well, we don't know, but come on, there's the accounts, there's things you can look at, there's stuff, you know, it's kind of just, and you know, I think the thing is, like, we rewind to the beginning of the season, let's think about the facts that we know, the things that we actually know, not something that someone said to someone who supposedly is of note, etc. We don't know any of that, none of us have heard any of that, and we know quite a lot of people and thought we might have heard something. I guess we're not in the privileged group, but at the start of the season, the bookies and everyone was saying we are just literally going to get relegated. We were like lowest of the lowest, etc., etc. And we had a great start, and it was optimistic and it was exciting, etc., for sure. And we are obviously struggling a little bit now, right? We've had a good transfer window, you know, other than me saying that we wouldn't have a good one.
And, no, you said we wouldn't do anything at all.
Yeah, I know. Well, because I thought we didn't have any money. But
we didn't have any money, and therefore I think that, to be fair, they have been creative about it. I listened to the interview that JJ did after the Rotherham game on Saturday, and obviously he's trying to put his positive spin on it. But again, he said that if we are going to do any more business, it'll only happen if other players go out. And that gives me slight cause for concern, because I don't quite know where, if anywhere, we have any more, so to speak,
I think if you look over the squad, there's one or two players, there's definitely one that springs to mind, that if and they wouldn't go for a fee, but it would be something off the wage bill would make a difference. And also, I mean, it's great to see Foyo's back, and I wonder if he's going to now, you know, feature at all. I mean, I'm, you know, it's weird now. I'm thinking, would he feature even in the Virtue Trophy? Because we're that close, would you risk it? Or will he go out on loan? And I'm not sure now whether that's the situation. But I guess the other thing is that my understanding is we played worse in the Rotherham game than we did in the Doncaster game, but we got a goal. We drew.
I followed a few other sites to be able to get articles from them for the program early in the season, and yeah, they basically seem to indicate that they were on a run of, I think, 8 losses in a row, and it seems to be the case. Even if you watch Matchday Uncovered, even the selective highlights that obviously we've done for our Matchday Uncovered, it would appear that any other team that was not on a run of 8 games in a row would have comfortably put 2 or 3 chances away, and we would have been 2-0 down by half time. Game over. I saw actually a link I sent to the group earlier on. A Port Vale fan was complaining that apparently they hadn't scored the first goal in any league game for 4 months. So I thought, okay, that's interesting. Let's check out.
Good news, they're playing Wimbledon.
Not only that, but the other good news is I checked out exactly the last time that we, bearing in mind how few goals we've scored recently, take out the last time that we scored the first goal in the league game, and it's like everything else is going right back to that game against Wigan that we seem to have mentioned on every pod for the last 3 months.
Yeah,
which is exactly 4 months tomorrow since we scored first in the game.
We've not got a good record up at Port Vale, so
they owe us one though, because I was at Port Vale last season and we lost 3-2.
Oh yeah, we were there.
You guys were. I was in the posh seats and you guys were in the terrace. We absolutely battered them for half an hour and they somehow got away with a 3-2 win.
Yeah,
well, she was shit the first 20 minutes.
Yes, we were.
We were awful. They deserved their. I mean, we thought it was going to be outside.
We were brilliant.
Yeah,
and then how they didn't manage to. Oh, Do you know, and that shot that just bounced
Hit the
everywhere.
bar, yeah.
Everywhere didn't go in and off the line and everything. It was just like scramble crazy.
The mad thing about Saturday's game, I was driving back from seeing my mum in Hampshire, and I figured actually in this circumstance, when we're not playing well, that's the best thing to be able to do, because I'm not at home. I can't check the internet. I can't see whether or not we've created zero chances, which it sounds like we did for about the first hour. All I can do is wait. And obviously, five over only give you score highlights. But so when they say Rotherham won, and you already know Rotherham already winning, therefore you know that we've equalised. It helps you drive a little bit faster up the M3 on the way back to London.
But it was, it's really difficult. And I don't know what's kicking. It feels to me like, you know, it gets to a point of a season where Reeves needs a bit of a rest. And my understanding
that was
the last,
about a month ago.
the last 20 minutes of the game against Rotherham, when we made four changes, which I don't know if we've done that ever before. But
we did that at Wickham about a minute before they scored the second goal.
And that made a huge difference. I think we played a lot better. My understanding is we played a lot better in those last 20 minutes. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see if Till starts against Port Vale. We're recording this on the Monday. And if he starts as well. So I'm intrigued of what we're doing. And also, it now feels to me like all the time it was like 3-5-2 was our system. That's how we're set up. But now it feels like it's changing, and maybe there's a sort of nervousness in that, or you know, under, you know, people bought in playing 3-5-2. Now we're going reverting to a not 4-4-2, Mark, but what would it be? A four?
No, I think we're playing Reeves and Smith in front of the back four. Obviously, the back four isn't as mobile as it has been because Lewis is suspended, and he'll be suspended again tomorrow night because he's been red carded twice this season. And I said after the Wickham game, I don't think, unfortunately, Bauer and Johnson, as solid and doughty as they are quick enough to play just as a two. But that's the only option we've got right now. Although we could obviously play Oggs on the right, and then you could play Asenway, but Asenway seems to have fallen out of favour completely, although he's on the bench. At the moment it is Smith and Reeves together. I wonder, now that we've picked up this lad, Nelson, who A, is taller, and I read a very amusing comment online saying he definitely won't fit in with us because he tries to play the ball forwards. If he could play centre mid and just be a body in there, and Reeves, I think, just needs a rest. I was just looking through the programme. He's made two substitute appearances. Most recently, he was on the bench and came on against Mansfield, which is, what, December the 13th. Other than that, you know, he's just played all the way through.
Yeah.
Really, apart from virtually cup games. But Saturday, Tuesday, you know, that's going to carry on as well. After this weekend, we haven't got a midweek game next week. But then we've got to squeeze in games against Stockport and against, looking at this midweek wise, we've got Northampton, 7th of March. This looks like it's midweek as well. Oh, no, sorry, Blackpool, 10th of March is midweek.
Yeah, but we've got Northampton week coming up on the 10th of Feb.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so we're playing Northampton twice, obviously once in the Virtue and once in the league. Frankly, you don't want to throw any game whatsoever. And obviously, we know we need the money, but I'd rather have 3 points in the league, frankly.
Well,
they're
both
at home, aren't they? So, you know,
I'm hoping for both.
Oh, of course, we're hoping for both.
But
yeah.
I'm a pretty little optimist. So, but it's gonna, you know, they're a tough game. There are tough games coming up, and we're making the assumption we're not going to make any more signings. Now, and like you say, Mark, unless someone leaves, but that feels unlikely.
I think that's it. I mean, I think maybe the weird thing is the loan market, right? Because sometimes you get bigger clubs just want their player to have like game time, so they pay their wages. That's the only other option that I would think. But you know, I'm not holding out a massive amount of hope for that at this stage. We've got what, 3 days left to go on the transfer. I know when the transfer window closes, but I wouldn't be that
randomly it closes on Tuesday. Don't ask me why.
Tomorrow?
No, next Tuesday, the second.
All right, okay. So we've got 8 days. So, you know, whatever. I'm not optimistic.
No, I don't think we're getting anyone else in. But, you know, it's so. Anyhow, we're all. Mark, you were sending over some stuff earlier on. Is there any sort of like key stats or things that we should be looking at?
It seems like form guides. I mean, we know that we're not in form, and we know that Orient game is the only win we've had in the last six games. The interesting thing is, even though
go way back more than six games, Mark.
I know that, but I'm just concentrating on the here and now, you know, which is the last few games. But despite that, over the last six games, there are one, two, three, four teams on 5 points in the last six games, of which we are one. Wigan as well, Barnsley as well, Doncaster as well. Orient have only got 4 points in the last six games. Stevenage have only got three. Port Vale have only got three. Northampton have only got two. And Rotherham have only got one. And that's the one that we kindly gave them on Saturday. Which is why, obviously, you look at the league table, and whilst it doesn't look good, as the interviewer that was talking to Jackson post-game on Saturday said, we're actually 1 point higher in the table than we were previously because Northampton lost and we drew. So, yeah, there's a from Barnsley downwards, there's a hell of a in the, you can see the form table on the BBC website. There's a hell of a lot of teams who have lost at least three of the last six. We have still won and, you know, Rotherham had lost five out of six. Port Vale have lost five out of six and won one game 3 games ago. So all is not lost yet. But the reality obviously is, if you're struggling to create chances, let alone score chances, against the likes of Doncaster and against the likes of Rotherham, then, you know, we've got Bolton coming up, who are third. Soon after that, we've got Cardiff, who are top away from home, you know, and these are going to be very, very tough games.
Oh, yeah, but come on, we've already beaten Cardiff 5-1, so surely that's a given.
Exactly, that's easy. Now, I was going to say, that's the thing, we've got obviously Port Vale on Tuesday night, who are obviously sitting at the bottom of the table, right? So, and then we've got Bolton at the stupid 12:30 kickoff on Saturday, who are obviously looking to push into automatic promotion, right? I think I'm going to make the effort to get there for the Saturday, even though 12:30 kickoff is stupid. So we're going to be on TV, clearly. But, I mean, what do you guys think? If we lose to Port Vale, what do you reckon Saturday's going to be like?
Well, I think if you lose to Port Vale, you know, the strong and creditable travelling fans will obviously let the players and the management know for sure exactly what's going on. People have got tickets already for Saturday. I mean, it's not going to be big and it's not going to be clever.
I mean, the point is we have to start getting points pretty soon because we're on a pretty dire run and we desperately, desperately need a win. And you've got to hope that out of some magic, we've got to pull 3 points or more out of the next couple of games, really, because it's been not good enough. But if you look at, we're not losing by a lot. We've had that Peterborough game that was shit, and we had the Bolton game that was shit. But other than that, it's been pretty, you know, we've been competitive. We just need to have that. I still go, we need the big lump up front to hold the ball up. That's the bit that we're missing. But
I mean, the thing I was going to say, I think we do agree with that. But I think we have been competitive. But I think if you skim through the stats, like shots on target, very many.
Yeah, I mean, I think competitive is a really weird one because I think what we're setting up to do is not to concede. So that's our thing. And then to hit people on the break, that's always our thing. But there's only so much. And I think there's only so much pressure we can invite onto ourselves without without scoring.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think that's the problem that we are facing at the moment.
The gold scored column is the one that's absolutely killing all those teams down the bottom. Wimbledon 28 from 26 games. Burton, Wigan 29 from 26. Burton 27 from 26. Northampton 23 from 26. Doncaster 28 from 26, Rotherham 25 from 26, and Port Vale, and this is the main reason Port Vale are where they are, because they're not that defensively leaky, but they've only scored 19 goals in 25 games.
Brilliant. Well, it's exactly these horrendous stats which make me worry about tomorrow night.
This one Mark Lewis does all the time. Mark Lewis is like, brings up the football gods and gets me worried.
I'm not attempting any football gods at all. No, I'm just showing stats.
No, it's just saying the stats. This is what it's like. This is the truth. You're right, Mark. I mean, I think we're just in a difficult situation. And Adam, as for what it's like, you know, I would guarantee if you're any of those sides near the bottom and you're listening to their podcast and you're listening to their fans, it's going to be the same thing. It's going to be, we need more money in the club. This is regardless of whether you're fan owned or not. We need a new manager. We need to try a new system. We get that extra bit of being punished because we're fan owned. So that's the extra thing that we get us. But I can guarantee that any of those sides below us in the table, or those sides that don't think they're achieving enough, are having the same, it's the fans are having exactly the same conversation, and that is we don't have enough money and our manager's crap. It's the common thing. I can guarantee that's what's happened. But for us, the additional thing is because we're fan owned, that's our problem. And you can't say that about anyone else apart from Exeter. So that's why, and that's the thing. So if we lose tomorrow, that's what's gonna happen. Anyhow, lads, we've had a really cool podcast. We've chatted with Clive, which has been absolutely amazing. We're gonna come on. We love our club. I know everyone does. We love being fan owned. There's people. Some people disagree with that, but you know, this is who we are. We're going to keep getting behind the team. Let's see what happens, and hopefully it's going to be a bit more of a positive atmosphere on Saturday. But until then,
the other thing to mention, just really quickly, because I know you're just trying to wrap up, is this double board meeting that has which has been called, which is next week, I think.
Tuesday, the 3rd of February, 7 o'clock at the ground. Get along to that, or at least join online. I think that's going to be. It's going to be really interesting, and hopefully they will be able to dispel some of those rumours that we talked about in the last pod, which came out yesterday, or some of the things on social. So hopefully they'll be able to dispel some of those sort of things, because I think that doesn't help. That creates that sort of sense of negativity. Anyhow, until the next time, chaps. Thank you very much. Thank you, my friend Nar Cooper. Thank you to Dr. Adam Proctor and to Mark Lewis.
Thank you,
Mr.
Matt.
Same old Wumbles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth if we win or we lose.